Good evening, everyone. This is the operator. Just need to inform you that today's conference call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect your line at this time, and you may begin.
Thank you very much, Lauren. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the SCI call on the 6th of February 2013. On the call today, we have Vananga, BC, Avi Doria, NCHT, Wolf Clinton, ISPCP, Anakin Scalesi, IPC, Mary Wong, NCEC, Angie Graves, BC, Thomas Rickett, NAMCOM, and Jennifer Standard, Registrar. We have apologies from Jennifer Wolf and Julie Headland. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Matthew Peregrine. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Ron.
Thank you very much. This is Ron Andrew. For the record, and I support that also, that we try to remember to put our name forward. I imagine the people writing the transcripts must be very difficult for them to capture whose voice belongs to which name. Now we've had the roll call. Let's have statements of interest. Has there been any changes for any of the members of the committee in terms of their statements of interest in the last 2 weeks? Aubrey, I see your hand. Please go ahead.
Yeah, but I want to make a statement after the statement of interest about a new participant in the group.
Fine. So I'll put you then on the side for a moment then, Aubrey, and ask again any statements of interest or changes to your statements of interest from any of the members of the committee. Hearing none, I will mark for the record that all statements of interest are up to date and current, and turn the floor back to you, Aubrey, please.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to announce that NCSG is appointing a new alternate member to fill that empty slot. Her name is Stefania Milan, and she's an individual member of NCSG. She's a researcher and a consultant, and I sent the decision's just being made. I sent her the notification of the meeting something like about an hour ago, so I didn't really expect that she would make this one, but I just wanted to let the group know, and then I'll probably introduce her at the beginning of the next meeting also. Thank you.
Excellent, Aubrey. Thank you very much for that. It's always great to have new faces, new blood in the SCI, and I'm happy to hear this news. I would also ask staff if they would please take the steps accordingly to make sure she's on the list immediately and that we can go forward in that regard to make sure she's up to speed on all of the information. Thank you. So the first order of business then we have on our is the approval of the agenda. Does anyone have any other things they would like to add to the agenda or comments about the agenda, please? Hearing none, I will move forward then with the agenda as has been published. And the first item on the agenda is the GNSO Council Liaison to the SCI. To refresh everyone's memory about this topic, there was a discussion about whether the GNSO Council should have a liaison from the SCI at their meetings. As we all are aware, I think for the most part, Wolf-Ulrich Knobin, who had chaired the SCI prior to my taking over recently, is also a counselor, so he served both of those roles and was able to provide information to the council when needed. So the question comes up for me, and I would like to pose this to the group. Is there a rationale for us having a council liaison, and if so, to what end? The question that comes up in my mind in particular is that if we look at the most recent experience with regard to resubmitting a motion, there was an unofficial statement came back from Wolf-Ulrich as a liaison, and then we still had to go back to the GNSO president, or the chairman of the GNSO council, and ask for a official request and some background information. So the question I'm having is whether or not we might want to keep the lines of communication very clear between the GNSO Council and the SCI, that everything is provided in a more official manner rather than a catch-as-catch-can manner. And when I say catch-as-catch-can, I'm basically saying that it seems to me, is that the FCI has a very specific role to play, and it's important that, pardon me, that the discussions with the GNSO Council and the FCI are handled in a transparent and open manner, and I would put that to the group. So I open up the queue, please, for discussion as to whether we should provide a liaison to the GNSO Council or we should look more for a more official channel of communication between our committee and the council. I see Wolf Uruk's hand and invite others to the queue. Wolf, please go ahead.
Thank you, Ron. Wolf Uruk speaking. Just looking back to what was during my term of being chair of this committee, I found it very helpful. Okay, that was a specific situation that I personally have been both the chair of the committee as well as the councillor, and that was not very comfortable and easy then to communicate between the council and the SCI through that. And I found it as well useful and to some extent also necessary because that there is a kind of communication liaison, so that's the basic, you know, in this respect. From my point of view, it could be done through either member of this committee. It is not necessary that it should be a councillor. It could also be somebody who is very close to the either vice chair or the chair himself to do this this liaison, because then, as you are saying, then it's simply just the official way, as it used to be through my person in the past. So the first, what I would say is, okay, a liaison is necessary and helpful from my point of view. The other point is, it's open to who should that be. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf. That was I agree. And where I was comfortable with that situation was the fact you were the chair of the SCI and you were able to respond accordingly as a chair. And that's really where I come from in my thinking about this. It would be, in my view, ideal for the chair or the vice chair to be that liaison or alternate. And maybe that's a question that Aubrey and I should be taking up in terms of one attend one meeting and the other attend the other. This next meeting, so to speak. But I feel more comfortable having chairs or vice chairs in liaison role just to make sure that there's clarity in the responses that are given to the GNSO Council when questions should arise. And that's more or less why I was suggesting that we might forego having a direct liaison and make it more of a formal channel. But I'm looking to the committee for guidance. Anyone else have some thoughts? I see Marika's hand is up. Please, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to clarify that, in the of the GNSO working group guidelines, the liaison is used there as a member of the chartering organization, which would be, in this case, the GNSO. So I think if you're using, maybe you want to, if you don't want to go for the formal liaison function, maybe it makes sense then to give it a different title, really make clear that it's not, you know, replacing that function, which the council, of course, still may decide to appoint if it would decide so. So just to clarify.
So, Marika, just to understand what you've said, the council would recommend a liaison between our organization and theirs as opposed to we recommending a liaison. Is that correct?
This is Marika. I think it can go either way. Normally, in most, like in formal PDPs, it's typically the council that appoints a liaison, because a liaison also at the start of a working group usually functions as the interim chair until the working group appoints a chair. But I don't see anything preventing a working group or a standing committee asking the council to appoint or suggest that they appoint a certain person as a liaison. But as I said, if it's a formal council liaison, as it's at least defined in the working group guidelines, that is someone from the chartering organization, which in this case would be the GNSO Council.
Thank you for that clarification. I have Anne, followed by Thomas. Anne, please.
Yes, thank you. It's Anne with IPC. I wanted to go back to some language, again, that's in the charter. And this relates to Marika's comments about the liaison potentially, you know, being appointed by the GNSO Council itself and that that is essentially a liaison communication that runs to GNSO SCI chair. And that is that whenever an issue is referred to GNSO SCI, there's a reference in the charter to the GNSO appointing an observer. I noticed that when we look at the list officially provided by the Secretariat, that both Jonathan Robinson as GNSO chair and Mason Cole as GNSO vice chair are designated as observers of the GNSO SCI. And so I'm really wondering if this is, you know, communication, the channel already exists as between the GNSO chair, GNSO vice chair, who are designated observers, and the GNSO SCI chair. Hello.
Thank you for that. I'm sorry. Thank you for that, Anna. I beg your pardon. I was on mute myself.
Okay.
I see. Thank you for that. And I see, Thomas, if you don't mind, I'll let Marika speak. Perhaps I think she might be speaking to that issue. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Maybe just to clarify to what Anne was saying, it's actually standard practice that the GNSO Council chairs are added to all the GNSO related mailing lists. So, indeed, you know, they are. I don't know how closely, of course, they're following the discussion, but it's a standard practice that they're added to all the mailing lists. So that's something you may want to consider as part of your discussion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Thomas.
Thank you, Ron. This is Thomas Rickert. Just in relation to what Marika said earlier with respect to the working group guidelines, if my understanding is correct, the liaison to the working groups, the council liaison, would have the role of making sure that all the procedures are abided by, so it's more of a checks and balances situation there. And since the SCI is not a working group, I think we could allow ourselves a little bit more flexibility here you know, see what is perceived best for the SCI. And I think that what is needed is to ensure that we are dealing with the matters that we're tasked with in a way that does not misconstrue the tasks and that actually provides for solutions that the council has asked us for.
Thank you, Thomas. And actually, that brings up a very good point. The question is, is the liaison actually reporting back to the GNSO at every meeting, or is it just fielding questions from time to time? I know that our charter calls for a representation at the GNSO Council meeting by the SCI at all face-to-face meetings, and I think that's standard practice, and Wolf reported to the GNSO Council in past meetings, and I had anticipated to participate in Beijing. So, and that's really the question. Is it the same voice speaking at each time on behalf of the SCI, or are there multiple voices? And I'm of a mind that it should be more of the chair, vice chair. But Marika, please go ahead.
Yeah, this is Marika. I can just talk about, you know, what is typically or currently the role of the liaisons or how it functions. Because I think in the past there have been instances where indeed the liaison would provide updates to the council, but they would take place on a much more regular basis. I think the way liaisons currently function is indeed that they're more there in the working group as an observer, that they're there to assist if there are any specific questions that need to be taken back to the council for clarification or resolution, or as well, you know, to serve as a soundboard for the chair should there be any issues or items they want to discuss. So I think at the moment, at least most liaisons that I've seen in working groups function more as a silent observer and only jump in if there's indeed a specific request either from the working group or the council would at one of their meetings suddenly say, oh, hey, can anyone tell me what's going on with that item? But for the formal presentations or updates to the council, it's typically the working group chair or whoever is designated by the working group to provide that update.
Thank you, Marika. I have Aubrey, and then Anne, and then Wolf. Aubrey.
Hi, thank you. This is Aubrey speaking. This is actually an interesting conversation. I tend to believe that we should have a council-appointed liaison who is a member of the council. you know, we talk about working according to most of the rules of the working procedures, so I think that makes sense. I can also see reason, you know, why we would want it to be a chair or a vice chair. But since neither of those is on the council, what we'd be asking is to sort of observe the council, and I don't actually think that that's appropriate. In terms of certainly if the council invites the chair or the vice chair to give a report at a particular council meeting, we should participate. I think the immediacy of the council having a liaison into this group is to the council's benefit, and it's part of the buffer that this group has in its operations. Now, we can obviously have exceptions, but I really think that this is a council decision, though, of course, this group can make a recommendation one way or another. Just sort of say up front is that I have an opinion on this one, but I will acquiesce with just about any opinion that the group comes up with on this one in terms of do we ask the council to appoint one? Do we keep silent on the issue and leave it up to them to decide if they want to establish one? Obviously, Wolf Ulrich is a member of the council, so even though he's not liaison, he could certainly go back and forth with discussion and bring up ideas there if he wishes, or whatever it is to do. I think it really is a council decision, and if they want one, they can appoint one, and we can offer an opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Avery. Anne, please go ahead.
Yes, this is Anne with IPC. I think that one of the most important issues in the liaison function is going to be the definition of the scope of the question that's coming from GNSO to the SCI. There have been a number of discussions about whether or not particular topics are within our purview or within our charter or within our remit. A lot of different terms are being used for how we define the scope of the questions presented to SCI. And I'm still not sure myself with respect to, for example, the question about reconsideration of a motion that our subgroup is going to meet on Monday, whether that question, as formulated, includes looking at the area of conflict of interest, or which it originally was formulated that way to SCI when Wolf Ulrich presented it, and I think he was also still chair at the time that he presented that formulation to us. But then I've heard others say, well, no, well, conflict of interest is a separate issue that the SCI has not been asked to look at, and so, you know, we shouldn't even be discussing that issue. I'm personally, where I'm going with all of this is that I think that there has to be a formal communication channel. I think it pretty much has to run between the chair of the GNSO and the chair of the SCI in order to avoid problems associated with, you know, a lack of clarity of the scope of our task.
That's very helpful. Thank you, Anne. Wolf Ulrich, you have the last word on this in terms of people bringing thoughts to the table. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Ron. It's Wolf Ulrich speaking. Well, I'm just thinking about, you know, how it is, this communication between the council and the SCI is going to be done in practice. So if you look at this, you know, the meetings, the council has meetings every 4 weeks, where the SCI is now supposed to have meetings every 2 weeks. So what's going on? In case the SCI has a question to the council or to the that, I don't think, you know, that the SCI is going to wait for, let me see, a next meeting. For example, if right now is in, the meeting would be in after 3 or 4 weeks, the next council meeting, well, to get that that ask for, rather than, well, to send an email to to the council, let me say, leadership and ask for that, for because it may be of interest to get an answer as soon as possible to bring forward the work. The other way is then that from the other thing, we need a kind of channel and to hear something what's going on the council with respect to questions the council or councils may have regarding the SCI. So therefore, looking at it, so from my understanding, from these kind of communication, the how it is really done, so I tend to agree more to that model, to have something, to have somebody who is on council as a communicator, at that channel, being that channel, and call it liaison in this case, to do this communication. So that's what I'm now, what comes to my mind, talking about the practicing of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf. I think what we can do here is bridge the gap. And I support Avery's suggestion that we might bring this to the GNSO Council. And what I will do, unless I hear some violent opposition to it, is we'll send a letter to the GNSO Council Chair, and we will offer him the two alternatives. One, that either the Chair or Vice Chair of the SCI sits in on the Council meetings as an observer to provide any feedback when and if necessary, or the GNSO Council would provide a liaison to the SCI to be abreast of the topics we're talking about and the various determinations we're coming to. So if everyone is in agreement with that, that we give them the option of making that selection, and then I think Avery and I, if in fact it comes back to the chair, vice chair, we will then pick up that mantle. And alternatively, if they recommend a liaison to us, then I think we can accept that as well. So if everyone's in agreement with that, I'll move us on to the next topic. I see Anne's got a check mark. She agrees. I see Will Fielder agrees. So then that's what we should do. And if, Marika, if you can make note of that, thank you, everyone, for those positive comments. Let's move forward with that. Moving on to the next topic, the termination suspension of a PDP. And thanks to Jay Scott for doing the heavy lifting on this and trying to get all of the final elements done. We've all seen this document, I hope, in the last 24 hours since it's been submitted. And I think we're all quite clear on what we've been discussing over these last several weeks. So I would take a cue if anyone has comments or suggestions that they would like to bring together with regard to this termination. And I know Marika had made a comment on the list, so I'd like Marika to actually get in the queue as well. Perhaps you might start with your comments that you submitted earlier, Marika. Please.
Yeah, this is Marika. I think had two comments. One was more a linguistic one. In the first sentence, I think it mentioned somewhere, let me just see. Yeah, basically saying in the third line, it says specifying the reasons for the action taken, which seems to suggest that the working group has actually taken an action. Well, I think it's the working group that makes a recommendation and then the council that would take action. So it's just a semantical issue. And as a more broader point, one of the things I raised is that one of the main objectives of the previous review or the review we currently undertook of the PDP is to actually build in more flexibility in the PDP process, because before it was very rigid, very strict criteria, very strict timelines that actually didn't really work in practice. So my concern is that the way it's currently written, it basically binds the council with, you know, hands and feet on what they need to do. There needs to be a written report, there needs to be public comment, while there may be certain circumstances where there is really no need to create that additional work or extra time that is spent on that. So a suggestion I had is to see whether there, an alternative may be to actually say, okay, that there is a requirement to produce such a report or do a public comment period if there indeed is a request from either, you know, any council member or could be a stakeholder group or constituency or any SOAC to build in the kind of safeguard that I think some people were concerned about, that the council may just terminate or suspend without giving any kind of reasons or any kind of opportunity to, you know, comment or provide input. So maybe that will be a way of balancing that and saying, well, in cases where everyone really seems to be in agreement, and it's completely obvious why there is a suspension or why there is a termination. There may not be a need to produce indeed a formal report or have a public comment period, but at the request of anyone, basically, there would need to be such a report and a public comment period would need to be conducted. Maybe that would be a bit of a balance between allowing flexibility, but at the same time building in safeguards to make sure that there is a need, or that the council needs to justify if there are questions being asked on why something is suspended or why something is being terminated.
Thank you, Marika. I'll take comments from the committee, and I'd like to say, Scott, if you would also get into the queue, that would be helpful. Thoughts about what Marika has just shared with us, please? Jay Scott.
I guess I would say that I'm not really bothered by that concept. I just want to make sure that I think that the concern that's trying to be addressed here is that if a recommendation is made to terminate or the decision is made to terminate prior to the issuance of a final report, then there needs to be some justification or an avenue for obtaining justification. I worry that Marika's suggestion would make it, just another point for everybody to argue over rather than if we just make it mandatory. So I'll leave it to the group, especially to Anne, who brought this concern up, to see if she's fine with that. But I just, I always get concerned when we leave it up to, groups doing this, because I think it leads to gamesmanship and misunderstandings and more infighting. So that's my thought.
Thank you, Jay Scott. I'm inclined to agree with what you've said, in so much as the principle here, as I understand it, and Anne has her hand up in the queue, and I see Marika also, so I'll come to you both in a moment, but I think the principle we were trying to achieve was transparency, and that there was a specific actions that would have to happen in the case of a termination of suspension of PDPs, because we are now in a PDP mode, model mode, if I can use those terms. So what we've achieved here, I think, is a very clear lines. But I obviously, the comment about binding hands and feet is not lost on me. So perhaps I can let Marika respond and then Anne follow. Marika?
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to add what I was saying before and maybe in response as well to what Jay Scott was saying is that of course, a formal vote needs to be taken by the GNSO Council on any of these actions. And the vote is a really high threshold, so it's a supermajority vote. So it's not an easy thing to game or just overrule. So I think, in principle, of course, the objectives or the reasons will already be in the motion itself. And there, of course, we have, a lot of GNSO Council members from different constituencies that can already raise their concerns or raise objections. And I think what I'm trying to say is that in that case where indeed there is, a certain group that might say, we don't agree, even though, you have specified in your motion why you want to do this, we want to ask you for, a formal report and a formal public comment period. I think that's the moment then where that happens. But I'm just, as I said, I'm concerned that this creates a workload, for example, for the council liaison to produce a formal report, where in certain cases that really may not be necessary as there will be broad agreement. And as I said, the details will be outlined in the resolution, and the high voting threshold the original reason for having this high voting threshold was specifically for that, to really make sure that this is not an easy thing that's applied or an easy vote that can be taken and just a couple of people that can just bring a PDP to a complete halt or suspend for a certain amount of time. So I think that was the original safeguards that were built in there when it was just about the determination.
Thank you, Marika. That's very helpful. Anne, please.
Yes, thank you, Ron. This is Anne with IPC. I had three points to make, the first being thanks to Marika for pointing out that in the last paragraph, the words action taken need to be changed. And it should either be consistent with the term recommended action in the next to the last line, as Mary had pointed out, or it should be recommendation in both places. So the first point was that in the fourth line and in the next to the last line, the term should be conformed, either recommended action or recommendation. I guess since we've already used recommended action, I probably would suggest that rather than the action taken, we say the recommended action. Second point is merely a typo. In the next to the last line of the last paragraph appears the term public commit, and I think we mean public comment forum. Sorry for not pointing that out earlier. And then lastly, with respect to the more substantive comments that are being made, and Jay Scott's invitation for me to comment on that, I tend to agree with both the chair and Jay Scott that if we are going to err, we should err on the side of public comment, not on the side of not seeking public comment.
Thank you, Anne. Is there anyone on the committee that disagrees with what Anne has just said and the existing text that is there? Mary, please go ahead, and then Marika.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. I'm not sure that I disagree in exactly, like black and white, but I understand what Marika is saying. So I'm just wondering if, I guess my question is, going back to the origin of this discussion when Anne raised it, what is the concern that we're trying to address here? Is it, for example, to make sure that the council taking such an extraordinary action is recorded in writing, or is it, in addition to that, to also ensure that there is an opportunity for public comment, like the community to comment on top of its councillors being there for the vote? If so, then I guess I, you know, maybe this is because this has gone on for so long, my brain is turning into a mush. That that seems interesting because we're talking about public comment prior to conducting a vote, and that's why I come back to what Marika is saying. I guess I'd just like some clarity from the rest of the committee as to whether we are trying to do more than just have a written record to make sure that the council actually documents and acts responsibly on top of everything else.
Thank you, Mary. I think that the spirit of this whole exercise has been trying to ensure that there would be, if there's ever a termination or a suspension, that there would be a report, and it would be automatic that there has to be a report. And I think everyone on this committee agrees that transparency is so critical to ICANN as an organization, and that everything is very clear and upfront and open. And so I understand that, and I really support that personally. I also understand what Marika is trying to share with us, the not creating more work than is needed. But Anne is right in so much as better to err. If we're going to err on one side, I'd rather err on a side where we're asking for more transparency. So that's really the tricky part of this question. I see Marika's hand is up, so Marika, please.
Yeah, this is Marika. Maybe to respond to Mary's question on the public comment, because I think the way it's currently written in, I think it's a bit a mix of what was originally there, because what was originally there, it was just talking about the termination. And the reason why there was a request for public comment there was basically to, in the case where a working group or wouldn't recommend or wouldn't agree with the termination, but the council still wanted to take such an action, that there would be an opportunity for public comment, basically to reflect the fact that there was no agreement between the working group performing the work and the council wanting to terminate for, you know, one of the three reasons or maybe other reasons. And I think that's what the safeguard that was built in the original language on the termination was, that then in those cases there should be a public comment forum. But I think now it has been reworked, and now it's basically saying if there's no working group forum, then is when there should be a public comment forum, which I'm not really sure if that really, in my view, that doesn't really follow the spirit of the original language and basically creates indeed a public comment forum just because there was no working group. While I think in certain cases where, I think the previous case where we've seen the suspension, there was a real clear reason why that was being done, because there were contract negotiations going on and people felt it was made sense to wait for that to finish, or a clear indication or whether that issue was going to be considered before continuing that. And in those cases, I mean, adding a public comment period seems maybe over the top, because, again, that was a unanimous vote by the council without any objection from any of the stakeholder groups. So that's what I'm trying to find, to see if there's a better balance that can be found between when you need a public comment forum, when you need a formal report, how that meets with the current mechanisms that already exist, with indeed having a supermajority vote requirement for these things. So then those are just the issues I wanted to put on the table.
Thank you, Marika. Mary, you have the last word on this one.
Thank you, and I'll try to make it quick. Thanks, Marika. That's very helpful, and it clears up certain things in my mind. And I'll just explain, I guess, that was one of the thoughts I had now that we're at this point in the process, that if the council hasn't yet decided what it wants to do, having a public comment forum serves a very different purpose from having a public comment forum when the council decides to go against a working group recommendation, for example. So maybe we need to take into account both and make that recommendation. I also make these comments, not really from the workload perspective, even though I think that could be an issue, but really because I think it's not entirely clear sort of in the ICANN community at large when there can be public comment forums and when there can't be. So if we go down this path that there's going to be additional things that come up as the GNSO work goes on, that off and on there will be either requests or recommendations or public comment forums. At some point, maybe this is not an SCI issue, but at some point the GNSO through the council will have to think about what sorts of things require public comments and what sorts of things don't. And that's it.
Thank you, Mary. So if the committee is in agreement with this, what I'd like to do is ask Marika to take the final version from Jay Scott, which I think that as a committee we all agree upon, and ask Marika to give us what I'll call a version 2, which incorporates her recommendation that we allow a constituency, any one of the members of the GNSO Council, to ask for that written report, because our written report, and also that we go to public comment, because clearly one of the problems that we have within ICANN, I'm sure all of us are experiencing it, is the fact it's growing so rapidly and there are so many issues to comment on, so no one has the bandwidth to actually be able to serve the organization as much as we all would like to. And so adding yet more public comment on things that are really not necessary, I can certainly appreciate where she's coming from. So if everyone agrees with that, I've asked Marika to come up with a second draft. And then we will, at our next meeting in 2 weeks, hopefully we can discuss it on the list over the course of the next 14 days, and then we can make our selection to send back to the GNSO Council at that time. Thank you, Jay Scott. In agreement? Anyone against this idea? Very good. So if we can take that as an action item, and we'll now move on to the next item on the agenda, and that's the chair, vice chair elections and terms. And this is a charter change, and that actually is a very good segue into the next issue on the or next item on our agenda, which we'll come to in a moment, the working group charter, creating a drafting team on charter revision. So Jay Scott has changed some language to accommodate our election process. Does anyone have anything they would like to speak to with regard to those changes that he's given us? Avery, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Avery, NCSG. That's actually really good, adding the who you're here talking for. I sent an email just the end, and in looking at the two solutions, the two steps, it's obvious, but it's not stated. The question is, what if in point two, when there's many candidates, no one gets a majority, someone has a plurality. We're missing the loop statement that sort of says top two go back to step one. I mean, unless we think we're saying that plurality is good enough and whoever gets most wins. And that may be the case. I don't know. I wasn't assuming that. So I hated to ask, and it was just in reading it that I thought of that. But indeed, I think we need that extra sentence. Thank you.
Thank you, Aubrey. No, that's exactly why we keep bringing these things back around, to bring the benefit of everyone's thoughts and ideas as they arise. So thank you for bringing that to the table. Jay Scott, do you see any problem with making a change in that regard? And just, let me put it another way. Does anyone have a problem with the idea of plurality, just to make it simple? Or should we, in fact, say that the top two will come back for a second round of election? Which would the committee prefer? Jay Scott, please.
I'm not sure I understand what I understand what Aubrey's saying, but I'm not sure you're both saying the same thing. So I want to make sure I'm clear. Are we saying that we would say in point two that the two top vote getters would assume those positions? Are we saying that the two top vote the people who obtained the two top votes would then go back and have another election?
I see Avery's got her hand up. My understanding, just to clarify what I was trying to say, was that we're speaking only to the vice chair elections. And as I understood it from Avery, if there were three candidates that applied, for example, for vice chair, and there was no majority, pure majority, well, actually, for three candidates, I guess there would be one, but in any case, if there was no majority because there was a multiple number of candidates, that the top two vote-getters would come back for a further election. But, Aubrey, please go ahead. What were you thinking?
This is Aubrey from NCSG again. No, actually, that would apply for either chair or vice chair. For example, in our first election in the SCI, we indeed did have three candidates. No one got a majority. The top two then went through a second round of voting and such. So it could happen to either chair or vice chair. It's doubtful that you would have that many candidates ever, but we did once for the first chair. So that's why I was saying the loop. The other thing I had said was I'm assuming that we don't want to give it to the plurality, that we don't want to say the person with the most in step two gets it, but that we did want to cycle through. And I'm just saying the way the rule is written now, there is no loop here statement, you know.
Understood. Thank you, Aubrey. Wolf Ulrich?
Yes, thank you. Well, and I agree to Aubrey, and I think that she knows exactly what we have done there. If I recall correctly, did we a bit also similar to what we are doing with the election of a council chair? That, you know, this rule is very detailed described in the rules of procedure, meaning in case we have more than two candidates and we are going through a procedure to reducing the set of applicants down to two, and then at the end, then we will have two candidates and none of the above in addition, and that's what we are doing there. Is that what you mean in this respect? So I understand that we did that in the past. Thank you.
Well, Frederick, that's great. That's very helpful. Why don't we ask Marika to bring that language forward in this document, because I think that's a good idea, and we certainly, with the GNSO Council are following that practice, there's no reason why we should not. Anyone have any disagreement with that?
Aubrey, hand up.
Please, Aubrey, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. At the moment, I think that used to be the way it was in the GNSO. I think at the moment, each house puts up a candidate, and we go from there. So I think there's been a different process. But so I don't think that we want to directly compare ourselves to the GNSO process because I don't believe that they're doing rounds at the moment. Thank you.
Well, Avery, if I might just come back to you on that, do you see any reason why we wouldn't want to follow that model? Does that not fulfill your wish?
No, I believe that that's the model. I was just saying that we don't want to say we're pulling down the GNSO model.
Okay, very good. Yeah.
Mm.
So, Wilkes, did you have a comment there?
No, I agree. Thanks.
Very good. All right, then, Marika, if you wouldn't mind just finding that language. I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it doesn't, Rick. I just see that Jay Scott has suggested specific language in the chat. I don't know if that reflects what Wolf was trying to say, but you may want to have a look at that because if that's exactly what he would like to see in there, Jay Scott
that's
has suggested it.
Very good. That Jay Scott's offering certainly works for me. I see Avery's in agreement. Anyone disagree? Very good. Thank you, Mary, also for confirming that. So then, Jay Scott, if you would be so kind just to add that in, and then we will look at it again next on our next call, and hopefully we can sign off on that one as well. Moving on, we've got 8 minutes left before the Marika, is your hand back up again?
Nope, sorry.
Okay, no problem. So I was saying we have about 8 minutes left to go on the call. We started 5 minutes after the hour, so if everyone could indulge just a few more minutes, we'll move on then to the charter revision drafting team. This discussion actually came up after I went on to our charter, and I was kind of reading through it to see, you know, just what we're doing and how we're approaching it and so forth, and realized that it was quite outdated from what we had from where when it was drafted to where we are today, and I felt it would be important that we go back and try to clean that up and submit it back to the council and have them approve it. I brought out the idea also that we might consider the difference between full or what's called full or unanimous consensus and rough or near consensus. There are five different levels of consensus within ICANN structure. And the question in my mind was whether or not it made sense for us to be at the highest level of consensus in so much as our job as a group is to try to find ways to ensure that implementation or improvement implementations go smoothly and are effective. And my sense was that we will always find ourselves in a situation where we'll have one or two others dissenting from the group, and probably for very good reason. And the thought that was going through my mind was that if you're in a rough or near consensus environment, then in fact any dissenters have the ability to bring forward their argument for dissent and post that with the actual recommendation. And as all of the activities that we undertake here within the SCI go back to or are sent back to council with a recommendation, I felt it would be important that we might allow for those statements of dissent to actually be part of that public record so that the council then could review it as well and make a determination as to what they wanted to do. My concern is if we stay with the full consensus model, we're going to find ourselves stymied from time to time because that's just the nature of human beings. We very rare when all members of a group all agree with each other. So that was the logic behind it, and I wanted just to bring that forward just as the background to it, and I'll just move from there to the actual activity. What I'm hoping we can do is create a charter revision drafting team that, on this call, that a little subgroup that can then work together to clean up all of those kind of things that are irrelevant and tighten up that document so that we've got a charter that can survive more than a couple of years going forward. So those are the two aspects. One was the background, and the other is I'd like to have an action item on this call where we gather together a subgroup. So with that, I will take a cue, and I see Avery has her hand up. So, Avery, please go forward.
Thank you. Avery, NCSG. I guess I got three things to say. I truly agree that scrubbing the charter to make sure that it's consistent with current realities is a good idea. I think having a subcommittee that takes a first whack at it, as long as we're going to do the full group process on it, is also a good idea. I volunteer to be on it. The last point is, since you included a substantive issue in putting this on the table, is to say that I'm very against changing the nature of the consensus in this group. The fact that it is that in this group was a specific point that it should be hard to change the processes on the fly, that it should take the agreement of everybody before one does it, so that no one can basically push through a change that meets a substantive agenda item. And indeed, status quo, the way this committee is formed, is that status quo has an advantage unless it needs to be changed because there's a problem. And if something can't reach conclusion and it has to sit and linger and continue to be discussed, that's a good thing for a group like this. So, I'm totally in favor of scrubbing, but we have a very long discussion to have on removing the full consensus rule of this group, in my opinion. Thank you.
I see Wolf Ulrich Knobin, and I would invite others as well to please bring your thoughts to the table. Wolf.
Yeah, Wolf Ulrich, ISPCP speaking. Thanks. Well, I'm also in agreement, really, and I would apply for the membership of this subcommittee, well, to do so and help to make it consistent, the charter. With regard to that point of the consensus planning, I'm not sure whether we should go this way, really, having one reason, which is, we are, let me say, chartered at the end or approved. The charter has to get approved by the council. This is one thing. So on council, because what we are doing, the SCI is, well, we are going to send recommendations to the council, and on council at the end, those recommendations are dealt with not on a consensus basis, but on a voting basis. So the question for me is then, why should we as the SCI act in a different, in a way before that, before that it comes to a voting, that we are also going for voting in this way? It's a question to me, so we should discuss that from several aspects, but it comes up to me. This is my first question I have, and at the end, well, I would like to cooperate. Thanks.
Thank you, Wolf. Can I just ask a question for clarification? I understood that you agree that we should be having a charter revision drafting team.
Yes.
But you don't agree with the consideration of consensus change, or you're open to discuss them both? I didn't quite catch that.
I'm open to a discussion for that, but I have strong concerns.
Okay, that's what I wanted to understand.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I see Anne followed by Mary. Anne, please.
Yes, thank you, Chair. This is Anne with IPC, and my question is a historical one related to the SCI charter, in that I'm guessing, but do not know for sure, that the full consensus provision in the charter was initially determined by the GNSO Council. Is that correct or incorrect?
I don't have that answer. Please, go ahead,
Wolf. If I can, Wolf speaking. So the charter was drafted by the SCIs themselves as a whole, but it has to be sent for approval to the council. So that's the way how we did it. So there was not a discussion on council about the question, consensus or not, but it was discussed here at the SCI, and it was put forward then.
Okay, thank you, Wolf.
Did you have anything further then, Anne, you'd like to add?
I would be interested to know a little bit more historically, and don't recall why it was set as full consensus at the time.
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody has the answer. I think that's just sort of standard practice.
There should be archives of all the discussions, both in the council and this. It would probably just take a little bit of work and time for somebody to dredge them up. But if we're going to have this conversation, I'm sure someone will dredge them up.
To ask for them to be dredged up.
Yes,
this is Rick. I can maybe clarify. If I recall well, I think the reason why there's full consensus is because for the PPSC and the OSC, there was also a requirement to have full consensus on any recommendation that came out of those groups. And if I recall well, I think that had to do with the sensitivity of the issues they were looking at, such as the revisions to the PDP, revisions of the council structure, the operating procedures. So I think at the time, those two groups were required to operate under full consensus to really assure that there was unanimous consensus for any of those recommendations coming out of those groups. And I think that was just taken over to the SCI, and I agree with Wolf. I don't recall any further discussions on that at the council level on whether that should be that way or shouldn't be that way, but it's maybe something to check. So I think that's a little bit the background, if my memory serves me right.
Marika, thank you for that. And in fact, because this is such an important topic for everyone, it would be very helpful if staff could find that and get posted to the list as soon as is practicable. Okay? Mary, I see your hand is up. You've been patient. Please go ahead.
Not at all. Thanks, Ron. This is Mary Wong from NCUC. And actually, just chiming in with that last point, I think that a lot of the SCI, the pre-SCI formation discussions happened when I was on council as well, so my recollection is similar to Wolf and to Marika's. I don't think there was a whole lot of discussion specific to the SCI on the full consensus issue. There was a lot of discussion about the need for the SCI. And so the point that actually I wanted to make originally was this, going back to Wolf's earlier point about process and what happens with the council and the difference between what happens when the council votes and when we make recommendations. I think really the point is that we're very different from the council. While we're here representing our respective groups and constituencies, background, context, viewpoints, and so forth, I think we're here to, for lack of a better word, oversee the proceedings and activities within the GNSO as and when requested by our charter. So I think for that reason alone, that it is important to have full consensus. And to the extent that there are issues we are asked to deliberate on that we don't have full consensus, obviously in the manner and the process similar to almost every group, there's differences that we can record as minority opinions, divergences, and so forth. And I think it's important, given the nature of the work and why we're here, that all that gets shown in ultimately a recommendation or even a lack of a recommendation that goes back to the council. So like Avi, I would support retaining the full consensus requirement.
Thank you, Mary. I see Anne and Thomas, and we're a little bit over time. If everyone can agree, we'll take a few minutes more. Anne?
Yes, thank you. It's Anne of IPC. I, again, have a question, and the question is this. Mary alluded to it just now. In a situation where everyone agrees that we have an impasse and we can do no further work, but that we do not have full consensus, is there a mechanism for simply reporting to GNSO Council the majority and minority opinions, as long as everyone agrees, that it's time to report because we can get no farther?
That in fact is exactly that's the rationale that I was going with, that I understand, and I look to staff and perhaps others to share their thoughts, but I understood it that it has to be full consensus and there is no reports. If in rough consensus, anyone who is in dissent of that discussion has a right to put forward a full report. And that's what I'm trying to get on the table. I'm trying to get that full reporting on the table. So with having said that, Thomas, please go ahead.
Thank you, Ron. This is Thomas, an NCA. To me, it would sound much more natural if no full consensus was required in this group, but ultimately, at the council level, full consensus would be required so that the council is fully informed about the diverging views of the SCI.
That's it.
In the absence of that being present, my question to Avery, Mary, and the others supporting the full consensus model is what your rationale is. You have given some reasons, but to me it sounds like you would maybe just, quote-unquote, like to increase chances of a vote going through if there is full consensus. So is it maybe a psychological hurdle that cannot easily be overseen by the council? So I'm afraid I don't really understand the reasoning why full consensus is needed if it can easily be turned over by the council. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I see Wolf's hand up, and you'll have the last word on this, Wolf. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Well, it fits to what Thomas was saying. Maybe I personally was not clear enough on that. You know, I'm looking for that. As I was saying, I'm open to discuss this. I have some concerns about right now. To leave that that model of full consensus. But I wouldn't like to have a model which leads us to voting here on the SCI. But if you find something in between, which it could be, as you call it, a rough consensus, also then where other positions could be outlined and also sent forward to the council, so I could find a way to do so. But what I was saying was, I see the council is the one who can go for voting, and the question for me, which should be discussed, is why should we as the SCI go for a way which leads us to voting? That's the only thing. But if you can find a model, well, otherwise we should discuss that. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone. So now we're well over our time, and I'm not going to keep everyone on the phone longer. I think this has been a very fruitful discussion, and perhaps it's a little premature for us to start putting together the working group on that. Maybe there's more that needs to be discussed, and I'm going to ask that we move this up on our next agenda so that we can give it more time. And then at that point, we'll form a working group, if everyone agrees with that. So with that, then, fortunately, we did quite well on our list. The action on the working group survey, I want to apologize to the committee for my comments last week, or on our last call, I should say, when I had said, well, we've all read it and we've gone through it, so if anybody has any problem, let's just send it on. And then when I started to read through the comments, which were very thoughtful comments, I realized that I was way off base. So first of all, my apologies for that. I do want to see a fuller and broader discussion on the working group survey, so I'm going to ask that we bring these two elements forward. The one about the charter revision drafting team will be right up on the top of the agenda, and that will be followed by action on the working group survey in our next call. And I note, thank you, Mary, and Anne has now confirmed that you have your call scheduled for Monday for the subgroup on working on the motion, the resubmission of motions. So thank you for that. That means we'll have some discussion on it on the call as well next week, or 2 weeks, I should say. So is there any other business that anyone would like to bring to the table at this time? Having heard none, I will thank everyone very much. This is I'm getting very excited about the amount of work that we cover and the really thoughtful conversations. I noted that Jay Scott also said that in the chat. We are working in a very harmonious way, and nothing could make me happier. So on behalf of myself and the Vice Chair, Avery Doria, I will bring this call to a close, and we can now stop the recording and look forward to our call in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.